the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Hey, welcome to the world's greatest podcast, a.k.a. Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic. Coming up really immediately, we're going to talk to Dan Gavitt, the guy who is in charge of the NCAA tournament for the NCAA. He got it in Indianapolis. And then a little bit later, we're going to talk to Shaka Smart, a guy with Texas whose team just went into Kansas and destroyed them. This is a great show. Stay with us. Here comes Dan Gavitt. All right. The NCAA tournament is coming to Indianapolis, and the man who I believe made it happen, he's going to probably not take credit, but he should. Dan Gavitt joins us from, I assume that's your office in downtown Indianapolis, right?
It is, Dan. Good to be with you and Seth. I'm in Indy.
Let's go this first and foremost. Why Indianapolis?
Well, you know, we were planning on having the Final Four in Indianapolis in 21. Anyways, that was awarded in 2014. It's a place that we've had great success for the Final Four approximately every 5 years or so. And so we were confident that, you know, the tournament could end well in Indy with so much experience. And when the committee and staff came to the conclusion that the only real feasible way to have a successful and safe and responsible tournament was to do it in one geographic area where there wasn't travel that was necessitated between rounds of the tournament, it just made sense for us to really explore Indy as the start of the tournament, the entirety of the tournament, and then finishing it as well. Great history, incredible partnerships and relationships that we have with venues and hotels and the hospitality industry here in Indianapolis. And of course, this is where the NCAA is headquartered. So our staff is familiar with, you know, all the folks here as well. And so those are really the reasons, I think, and, you know, just a long history and great experience here in Indianapolis.
Dan, are you going to have, quote unquote, the first four, the opening round, depending on the semantics, how you want to call it? That's going to start in Indy. It's not going to be in Dayton. The facilities that you've picked, will you guys have fans available into those facilities, or will it be family only? You know, what have they decided? Because you've got a wide range of facilities.
Sure. So yeah, all games, all 67 games from first four through the national championship game will be in the greater Indianapolis area. We haven't yet determined which venues, particularly the first four games, will be played in, but all games will be played, you know, in the six venues that we've identified. And we think we have some real good ones. We've got, you know, obviously some great venues that we use for the Final Four in Lucas Oil Stadium, as well as Bankers Life Fieldhouse, where we have the regionals and first and second rounds on a regular basis. And then to have some more kind of historic, you know, venues like Hinkle Fieldhouse and Farmers Insurance Coliseum, as well as IU and Purdue Assembly Hall and Mackey Arena, will, you know, make for a really unique experience and really provides us with the opportunity to have that controlled environment, which is so important to being able to do things safely and responsibly during this pandemic.
Seth, I was pushing for the house that Dokic built up in Northwest Indiana.
Andrew, I can understand that.
1,500 people. Let's go. Come on. Hey, Dan, where are teams going to stay? I was talking to Seth earlier, and I read that, you know, some media guys are saying, well, you know, it's a short drive from Indy to Purdue or to Mackey Arena. You know, as a coach, it's not. As a coach, you want to stay right next. Is everybody going to be housed in downtown Indy?
Yes, Dan, everybody will be in Indianapolis. We'll basically be in four hotels that are connected to the convention center. So we'll be able to provide teams with a dedicated floor on their hotel and then walking access to the convention center where they'll have team meeting space and also practice facilities as well. Again, having that controlled environment so that teams are, you know, safely housed and can practice and have meetings and meals together without being in the greater Indianapolis community. So, yeah, those teams that play at IU and at Purdue will bus to and from the games. They will not stay in Bloomington or West Lafayette. You know, having that really kind of boils down on a microcosm how important it is to be in one county or one state so that you have protocols, medical protocols that can, you know, match up with in the contact tracing area and the testing area to make sure that teams, you know, stay healthy and can continue on their path, those that win competitively towards the national championship. And I didn't fully answer Seth's question. I just forgot. We will have family members at all 67 games. We have approval from the local health officials on that already. So that's a definite for players and coaches. Fans above that will be determined at a later date, probably later this month or in early February. We all just agreed that it was important to kind of track with how things are going here locally with the pandemic rather than to make decisions on attendance. We have, as you know, Dan, the Colts have had fans upwards of 20% at Lucas Oil Stadium. The Pacers have approval, I believe, for some fans, but haven't welcomed them yet. I think they're waiting, you know, until they get a little deeper into the NBA season to do that. So we'll see. We're hopeful, but it'll really depend on local conditions.
The word that is being used is not bubble, it's controlled environment. What's the difference?
Well, it's a great question, Dan. You know, I think when we think of the bubble and what the NBA was able to do so successfully in Orlando, it really was a very tight bubble. I mean, they used, I think, two hotels. They used one competition venue, basically, or at least on the campus of Disney, and two facilities. And then dedicated transportation services between all those facilities. But we're a little bit more spread out, you know, even though we're in one geographic area, we're in four hotels, we're at six different venues, two of which are outside of the city of Indianapolis. And so, you know, when you have teams in a downtown metropolitan area, it's really more of a controlled environment, which is frankly what all college basketball teams are operating in right now and will in their conference tournaments. You know, they're not in true bubbles. They're students. They're, you know, on campus. They're either in-person classes or at least interacting with others on campus. So it's just more accurate, we feel, to you know, call it a controlled environment than a bubble.
Dan, when you hear people come out and say we need to delay the season or put off the tournament or move it to March, I mean, to, you know, May or June, and when you hear him say that, well, you know, I don't understand what the NCAA is doing. Explain to the common fan what has transpired in terms of what you guys have done from the day the tournament was canceled to the decision that's been made to move it to Indianapolis. So I think it's so unfair to that people do not understand the planning that's gone into actually making this a reality.
Thanks for the question, Seth. I think there has been maybe some misunderstanding or, you know, with the amount of planning and consideration that was given to all of this going way back into the summer when we saw and were able to follow and evaluate what other properties and leagues have done to bring sports back, whether it's the PGA Tour, certainly the NBA and WNBA learned so much from their experience in Orlando and Sarasota. And then with the start of college sports, with college football, we had a college volleyball season this fall that people don't recognize. And so Major League Baseball playoffs, the NHL. So we monitored all of that and came to the decision in the middle of September that we needed to delay the start of the season by a couple of weeks because fundamental to having any success in a safe and responsible way for basketball was to have testing available. And it really wasn't going to be available in early November as we would have otherwise planned to start the season. But we knew it could be by Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving also happened to coincide with a time when 75% of all Division I schools broke for the semester and had either finished the semester completely or at least gone to virtual student studying only. And so it going back to this controlled environment, it allowed for teams to start their season in a much less populated campus environment, a much more controlled environment where the opportunity for infection was much, much lower. And indeed, I think there was reason for success in the first month of the season due to that. We've had over 75% of the games played successfully and some postponed, obviously, to be rescheduled at a later date. I understand everybody's, you know, different ideas about what could lead to a successful season, but there are unintended consequences to everything. And one of the things I think we learned from college football is that the longer runway you have, the more opportunity for success you're going to have, because disruptions are absolutely going to happen. when we started the season and had, you know, several teams on pause and games canceled or postponed right away, we weren't the least bit surprised. Anybody that was surprised wasn't paying attention to what was happening in the months that preceded that. Disruptions are an inevitable part of this unfortunate pandemic, and it's for the health and safety of everybody involved. And so having more time to, you know, responsibly get games in, understanding you're going to have pauses, is really what the strategy was. And it's playing out. You know, we're at a pace right now, 5 weeks into the season, if we can stay on this pace, God willing, we'll have teams average somewhere between 20 and 25 games before their conference tournaments. That's a really representative season in a challenging environment like we're in. And especially given the fact that basketball student athletes will be able to get an extra year of eligibility in any case. So it's a little bit of a, you know, an extra year from that standpoint. And at least we provided an opportunity for a regular season. You know, the other thing that may irk me a little bit when I hear things about, you know, the NCAA tournament, it's all about the NCAA tournament. Well, of course it is, because every team wants to play in the NCAA tournament. It's one of the great events in the world. But the reality is that 80% of all college basketball teams aren't going to play in the NCAA tournament. And so they're either going to have a regular season and a year that they can't otherwise get back, or they're not. And delaying it and delaying it and delaying it, you know, and waiting for vaccines that are now rolling out slower than we anticipated, unfortunately. Once you get deeper into the spring, you get the complication of the NBA draft and other things that happen with student athletes that are graduating and moving on with their lives. So it was a combination of all those factors, Seth. I understand, you know, everybody's got different ideas, and there's not one right or wrong answer. We probably won't know whether it was things were decided right or wrong until after this is all over. But I feel good about the decisions that have been made and the fact that we're being able to have a season, you know, for student athletes to have some level of normalcy in this otherwise unfortunate time in our lives.
Hey, just a quick follow up to that. What, how do you guys have a plan of, say, you know, obviously the announcement for the selection is going to be, say, on Sunday, and then you're going to bring everyone to India, and I'm sure there's going to be some type of protocol and testing, but I'm sure it'll be testing prior to the, when teams play as well. What happens if a team tests positive or has a member of their party or a contact trace? What happens then? Will there be teams like in the bullpen?
Well, it's still being determined. Frankly, the committee is still kind of wrestling with that. You know, we have other examples of other events where there's been essentially backup, you know, teams. There's some consideration being given to that. No decision yet. It's complicated, of course, but we are committed to having a 68-team field, and we want to start the tournament with 68 teams that can participate. I guess it more complicated even, Seth, once you start the tournament. If unfortunately we were to have, you know, positive case during the tournament and a player or a team were, you know, to have to pause, I don't believe we're going to have any opportunity, you know, to postpone the tournament. Once the tournament starts, we're going to have to go to conclusion. But we are giving some consideration to what would happen if we had a team essentially become ineligible due to health and safety reasons before we start.
Now it's been said, you know, there's always critics, as you know, Dan. The NCAA is like this faceless thing to just blame the life's ills on, or to say, you know, well, they're all about money. I told you on my radio show, everything is about money. And I don't, you know, there's a reason Seth and I do games. I love doing games, but I don't know if I'm going to Rutgers for free. You know what I mean? But, you know, you mentioned something that irked you. Well, does it irk you when you hear guys, girls, whatever, pundits say, this is just about money. Of course they're going to have it. They don't care about student health.
Yeah, somewhat. You know, Dan, I mean, I understand it because of the size of the money that is generated from this tournament and from college basketball in general. But, you know, the NCAA runs in an annual year 90 different championships. This year there'll be fewer than that because Division III has decided not to have some championships. But, you know, we're still going to have a Division I women's basketball championship, Division II and III men's and women's basketball championships. We're going to have an ice hockey championship. They're in the middle of their season now. And, you know, those aren't all about money. So I don't understand particularly why you know, in some people's minds, there's this bias about men's basketball just because it generates a fair amount of revenue.
Can I help?
Those young men.
Can I help you with it?
Yeah.
It's easy. You know what I mean? It's easy just to say, well, it's all about money. And then say, Dan Gavitt and the NCAA are, they're only about money. And I'm like, really? They canceled a tournament last year. I mean, you know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I understand, there's a lot of reasons to have a reasonable debate about intercollegiate athletics right now. And that's fair. And we certainly are seeing that in our states and in our federal government even. But this tournament should be played if it can be played safely and responsibly. The young men that are playing right now that aren't going to be playing next year deserve the opportunity to compete for national championship.
How much do you think you guys will spend in testing?
How much?
Will you spend? Because I know that people lost their mind on the mask madness, which I actually thought was brilliant.
And an
opportunity to generate one awareness, which is really, really important. It sends a proper message. It's obviously relevant. And I would think you'd be able to raise some money because I would think that the cost of testing for the tournament and throughout the tournament has got to be astronomical.
Yeah, I don't have the exact figures in front of me, but yes, it is substantial. Of course, our schools are spending, a lot of money right now on testing as well, and will test for all NCAA championships, not just the men's championship. So, but that's, that's the responsibility to do it in a safe and responsible way. And that's what we're going to do, or else we're not going to do it at all. And you mentioned mass madness. Unfortunately, that, got misinterpreted when the news broke a little bit on the trademark that was filed, but those are donations. We're trying to promote healthiness and safety, and we have the Division II championship scheduled this year in Evansville, Indiana, just in the southern part of the state, and Division III championship in Fort Wayne, Indiana. So it's a chance for the NCAA to promote statewide safety and health, right? And wearing the mask and social distancing and washing your hands And so the governor of Indiana, Governor Holcomb, and the mayor of Indianapolis, Mayor Hogsett, were very appreciative of that opportunity to try to spread, an important community health awareness message.
Will there be an announcement on the women's tournament soon?
There will. Yeah, Dan, we've been working in a similar way, the Women's Basketball Committee and staff, on the one geographic area plan. The women's championship Final Four is planned to be in San Antonio, Texas. So we're working with the San Antonio region right now to see if a similar format can be applied there. I would suspect that by later this month, we'll have some decisions and announcement there.
I speak for all of Indianapolis when I say, if San Antonio can't get it done, we'll take it. What the hell? Hey, Dan, thank you so much, man. I mean, it's thank you for two things. One, I live in Indy. I love Indy. Bringing it to Indy is, as you know, is energized Indianapolis. Yesterday my phone's ringing. People are calling the show. They're so excited. And two, for getting this done. I mean, or getting this in place to get done, because when, like I said earlier, when you guys do something, man, it's like this big nameless, faceless blob that everybody throws darts at. And, you guys have done a great job, and I appreciate you very much, and thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, it snowed outside here today. I'm really pissed off the NCAA.
What you hey, guys my back talking, hurts. Think,
it,
my
it's
back
underappreciated.
Hurts. What the hell did that rabbit do? Jeez, those guys at the NCAA.
It just ticks me off that people, who never actually been in the arena and understood all that it takes to bring something together, who sit behind a, laptop or whatever, can continue to criticize. But if you ever ask any of those people a tough question or respond to them in a tough manner, and I'll use a perfect example, because it really kind of, the thing that happened with Brian Kelly, he was just being kind of honest about his answer. Like, hey, we got to the Final Four. We're playing our asses off. We're trying to get better. We're trying to get over the hump. But, we're going to celebrate what we have. Well, you guys need to celebrate what you've been able to do, because I know it's been a long year. without the tournament. And as a basketball lifer, I want you to know how much we appreciate your hard work.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks to both of you guys, Seth and Dan. Appreciate how much you love the game and cover it so well. And it's a passion, been part of all of our lives. We're not anywhere near celebrating until April 5th, God willing. There's an awful lot of work to do to make sure this happens. But we're excited about the possibilities and the optimism. And we're going to work our butts off to make this happen for all the young men and coaches that are in the game.
That's the great Dan Gavitt right there, Seth. The czar. It's great. I mean, look, let's be honest. I mean, he's got people coming at him. He's got – everybody has an opinion, right?
How hard they've worked to make this
happen. They just got it done.
Everything
for them.
Through to get to this point, and their vision is extremely clear. They know exactly the direction that they're going. They know it's going to be difficult. They know there's going to be – roadblocks and detours along the way. And the reasoning, the thing that bothers me is they have a reasoning behind everything they do. It's not like they're just throwing spaghetti up against the wall and hoping it sticks. I mean, they go through a lot to get, you know, to trying to get to the end result. And like, you know, it's like the mask madness created this uproar. And like there was only good intentions. Yet if you, you know, it's the prism you look at things through. And if the prism you look at things through is one of negativity, then you know what? So be it. But, you know, look, we're, what is it? It's January, we're 2.5 months away from the field being announced, right? I mean, it's,
yeah. Shall see.
We're moving forward.
I'll tell you this. I'll tell you what I like. I like the fact that we're set. It's just a matter of whether, you know, this awful disease can allow it to happen, basically, and people can fight it and do their thing. But I think it's great. The women's tournament will be announced, and you know, to me, it's the best time.
News today, we got the women's tournament. We got a little breaking news. Didn't
we? We did.
All right, Dan. You know, we spend all our time talking about how good the Big Ten is, and you know, like to me, it's not even close. You watch, like I sat in the studio on Saturday. I saw a zillion games, but there were six games that we had on the air. You watch the Big Ten games, they're just different. All right. They're just different. They play harder. They execute better. They're more competitive. They're at a higher level. All right. Let's go on the other side. You know, ACC in this moment in time, Duke hasn't played, I think, since December 15th or 16th. Virginia, doesn't seem like the team maybe we thought they'd be because Diakite and Key, and they're not as tough as they were perceived to be. If you look at the top of the ACC now, Virginia Tech is undefeated. So, you know, not a lot of games have been played. NC State is 2-0, and I think NC State's pretty good. But when you look at the ACC, is there anyone you really get excited about?
Seth, we've talked about, you know, this in our season previews. Clemson's been pretty good at 8-1. You know, they beat Purdue. Florida State, they beat Indiana last shot, turned around and got whooped. There really isn't. All right, you're going to think I'm crazy with this, okay? You're going to think that and I don't believe that the ACC, what's the right word, doesn't care about the season. But I just feel like maybe it's because there's no North Carolina at 10-0 or Duke at 10-0 or Zion Williamson or whatever. There's nothing there right now. Does that make sense? Like there's nothing, and maybe there will be. Maybe Louisville gets great, and hell, they're 7-1. They beat Kentucky. Normal year, you'd be like, this is awesome. Louisville's off to a hell of a start. And as a coach, you and I would both kill to be 7-1. Right, I mean, there's good records, 6-1 the Orange, 8-1, but it I don't know. For the first time in, I have no idea how long, it just feels like there's nothing there. Right? Name me one. You know, Scott. You know all the players, but I bet you if I asked a fan, a college basketball fan, a guy that follows college basketball. Name me the top five players in the ACC. they couldn't name. And you and I both know superstars come out of that league. The best of the best come out of that league. And maybe they will, right? But if you ask the average fan, they don't know. They don't know nobody out of that league.
Right? Yeah, they're probably the best prospect is Scotty Barnes. But, like,
right.
Like, here's the deal. You think of North Carolina. Does Garrison Brooks get you excited?
Six and four.
Yeah, Dayron Sharp is going to be a nice player. They're playing a freshman backcourt. You can only be so good. Duke, does Matthew Hurt get you excited? Jalen Johnson's out. I don't know. Virginia, you know, the whole is equal to the sum of his parts, but when they're relying on Kihei Clark to get 19 points, that's a different Virginia team. It's not like they have Guy and other pros and Hunter and Jerome, and they're it's just different. You look at it and you say, all right, who's going to win a national championship? Who's going to get to the Final Four? You know, Mike Young's done an incredible job at Virginia Tech, and Alume, the kid who transferred with him from Wofford, has been terrific, and Nabidi's done a nice job, and Radford's a nice player, but there's no one to get you really excited. NC State, Kevin Keats has done a really nice job. They lost the one game to St. Louis. They went through a protocol where they were shut down for a while. They were missing some players. They got Funderburk back, who's a really nice player. There's no doubt about it. They got a nice freshman backcourt. But, you know.
Amir Sims.
Yeah.
He really good, right? I mean, and Clemson's really good, I think. I mean, you know, like.
They're good. They struggle scoring, but they're a really good team.
Yeah, and their leading scorer is 13 points a game.
Yeah, I mean.
You know, if you got to beat them in the tournament as a coach, hey, you're sweating it out. You know, this team that's beaten Maryland, beaten Alabama, they've got probably as good a wins beating Purdue, beating Mississippi State. But I don't know. And if I'm Brad Brunell, I'm cussing us out. I'm like, what are you two talking about? I thought you two were coaches. You're sitting there 8-1 with those wins, and you're poo-pooing. I'm with Brad on.
I agree with that. I agree with you because we were that team. Like when we won my first year at the ACC, we won 8 games in the league, and all of a sudden people said the league's bad. I'm not saying the league is bad. The league is fine. The league is just not how, when you think of the league, you think of lottery picks. You think of Final Four teams. You think yes. of Elite Eight teams. I'm not sure it has it this year. Like, compare it to the Big 12, all right? You know, we're going to be talking Shock Smart in a little bit. I mean, you look at this Texas team, all right, mature, experienced team, extremely long, athletic. You know, Greg Brown's going to be a very good player. I mean, you look at, you know, Kai Jones, and he's going to be a terrific player. You look at, you know, Kansas. Now, Kansas isn't what Kansas was. They don't have rim protection. They don't score in the paint. They don't do those things. But I mean, just across college basketball, I'm not sure that the sexiness – outside the Big Ten, I don't see the level of play. I do think the Big 12 is the second best league, and I think probably the Big East is the third best league. But when would you ever said that the ACC was not one of the top four leagues in college basketball?
I have never said that. I'm going to tell you right now, and you and I both go back to when Tom McMillan was playing with Lenny Elmore, right? I mean, you're never going to hear me say, except for maybe this year, that they're not in the top four. It's just never going to happen. And the fact of the matter is, it may never happen again.
Well, I'm going to ask you another question. Could you say that same thing for the SEC?
Oh, I think so. I mean, all right, if you're going to say they're not a top four league, give me your top four leagues. I know you just said the Big Ten.
I think I got them at fourth.
They would be Big Ten, Big 12, and the Big East. I think that's fair.
ACC, and then, like, you know, I don't know, between the Pac and the SEC, you know, neither of them get me very, very excited. I mean, the SEC is a league. Tennessee gets whooped up by Alabama, and a good win by Alabama. Alabama obviously lost to Western Kentucky, if I'm not mistaken, but their style of play, their identity, kind of they imposed that identity on the game. I think Tennessee's really good. I hope that Jaden Springer is fine. I know he got hurt in that game with his leg. Eve Pons can really defend, and You know, I think that Fulkerson, the fifth-year senior up front, is a good player. I think that Josiah James is big and athletic and rangy, and Keon Johnson's good. And I think Tennessee is good. I think the kid Cam Thomas at LSU is a joke. I hope he got a strong ass offer, because that dude just makes it. Because I mean, he, you know, they've got guys, whether it's Javonte Smart, Wadford, or Cam Thomas, they are legit. Those three guys can play. I don't know if they can guard, but they can play. I'll tell you, a sleeper team in that league looks like Florida, with everything they've been through. You watch them this past weekend against LSU, and they play really hard. They extend their defense. The ball is moving. This kid Castleton was at Michigan, who couldn't play at Michigan.
Colin, yeah.
He's had back-to-back they're playing through him, and he is finishing, making plays around the basket. He's been really, really good. I just think it's really interesting to me that I don't know if it's the year of the pandemic. I don't know if it's because SEC had so many guys go to the draft last year, and now this year these kids didn't have a good summer. They didn't have a good preseason, so they didn't get a chance to develop maybe the way they normally would. But I just think that there's a huge gap. And it's weird. And I know people are getting tired of me saying it, but it's just more – it's you watch these Big Ten teams, and they might not win a national championship. I don't know, because, you know, there's Gonzaga and there's Baylor and, you know, and the teams like that. I mean, but the way – day-to-day, day-in, day-out, watching Big Ten basketball is just different.
Yeah, it is. May I give you my team of the week, my team of the year so far, my team of the 2021 season thus far?
Yes, the Bulldogs. Drake, it's got to be Drake.
13-0, coming off 24-20 wins the last 2 years. Darren DeFreeze, Marty Richter, my old assistant, is with him. Great staff. Now, here's a question for you. Okay.
They whooped Southern Illinois yesterday. Whooped them. A good team. They were 7-2 Southern Illinois.
Let me ask you a question. How are we going to judge teams like Drake if they don't win their conference tournament? Because I looked at who they've beaten, and I've looked at who Clemson's beaten. A little bit different. You know what I'm saying? They already have 13 wins, which is the, you know, prerequisite to have a NCAA tournament bid, and they've won them all. Are we going to judge things different this year when it comes NCAA tournament time? You know, you're playing back-to-backs. Would that factor into anybody? You know, a couple teams, San Diego State lost to Colorado State, bounced back and had them down 25 at halftime last night. What are we going to do with that?
I think the eyeball test is going to be a big thing. I really do. I mean, look, some teams lost the opportunity to get in an MTE where they could get a chance to get a win on a neutral court. You know, there have been a lot of MTEs this past year. The problem is they were all on a home court. So, I mean, it was basically just a more guaranteed games for certain teams. And
yeah,
it was a high major that brought in three or four low and mid majors. They beat up on those people, and then those teams played amongst each other to get the rest of the MTE. I think it's going to be an eyeball test. I think the one question I would have, you know, liked to talk with Dan Gavin about is, do you think it's smart to play conference tournaments?
Well, I don't know that he determines that. I think each conference is going to determine.
I'm just saying, just in general, in terms of, you know, we're talking about trying to get to the finish line. Does it make sense to play conference tournaments?
I don't know. That's a great question, particularly if you're not having any fans there. Here's what I think. I think the answer to that, based on talking to Dan now twice, is where are you playing them? And what are the laws, rules, where you're playing them? Which is one of the reasons, you know, here in Indianapolis, we have to wear masks, but we're a little bit open for business. You know, the Colts have had 12,500. They dropped it down to 7,500. But we're a little bit open for business, not as much as people would like, but you're never going to be as much as people like, obviously. Would it be the same thing if you played in North Carolina, you know, Greensboro? Would it be the same thing where you're going to play the Big East tournament? I don't have the answer to that, but that matters. That matters big time. Like, look, if you really wanted to play, if you wanted to play everything that you wanted, you go down to Naples. Hey, man, they'd pack 20,000 people in an arena and, you know, nobody would care. It's unbelievable. So every place is different. Seth, can I throw a sock at something?
Oh, we haven't had a sock thrown in a while.
I need to throw a sock at all the old curmudgeon media guys that continually say, well, of course the NCAA is going to have a tournament. It's all about the money. It's always been. Shut up. Ah, throw a sock at you. I still hear it. Like, guys have come on my station whining. Throw a sock at you, old criminal. All the old guys, well, you know, of course they're going to have a tournament. It's all about the money. Shut up. They canceled a tournament last year. And you know what else? All these guys that wrote books and are supposedly such legends in the sport, I didn't hear one of them, not one of them apologize for the dumbass things that they said about the NCAA last year. Of course they're going to have the tournament. I rolled it up and I said,
I'm happy we're finally throwing socks again. But here's the thing that, on a serious note, that bothers me. And I'm going to bring this up multiple times today. But, you know, like, people get all whacked out if a coach in a press conference says something that they don't want to hear. So, like, Brian Kelly this past week was asked a question, and he protected basically his team, his program, and the success that they had. Now, they didn't win national championship. They lost to Alabama. They've been to the Final Four a zillion number of times. But he stood up for his team, you know, and said, you know, hey, we're going to keep on working. And people took offense to that. And, you know, the one thing that I've noticed, and look, I don't know if I'm a member. I'm a basketball coach that works in the media. That's what I am. Or fired basketball coach, right? So people, you're not a coach. You were fired. You stink. You didn't recruit Curry. You didn't do that. Come see my ACC Coach of the Year awards. Come see my wins against number one. It's not a big problem. But here's the thing: is that if any time someone pushes back, it's like their skin is so thin that they're almost, I don't know, defiant about it, that then they create a greater agenda. And, like, here's the thing, the best journalists, in my opinion, are the ones with no agenda and respect others' opinions and don't have preconceived opinion. And, you know, to me, I just don't get it. I don't get it. It's, look, we can agree to disagree. That's fine. But the mean-spiritedness of some people, if you don't agree with them, to me, is ridiculous. I mean, and that's, you know, quite honestly, that's a microcosm of what's going on in our society. So, I mean, in the world, there's no mutual respect for someone else's opinion. This has been an incredible conversation. We appreciate Dan Gavitt, but we've got to kind of close it down now because we have Shaka Smart, the Texas Longhorn, the number 4 team in the country. He's going to give us a basketball clinic. We're going to welcome in Shaka Smart. You know, Dan Dockett joined the Ball Brotherhood this year. But we lost a very distinguished member in Shaka Smart.
Yes, we did.
And, you know, I don't know if it was Herculean or something, but, like, you know, the more I watch his team, I think by the end of the season, like, that thing's going to be grown out. He's going to be like 6'6". So I got to ask you, like, the hair. I mean, this is a Shaka Smart that I don't know. I mean, how did this happen? Let's get to important stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't cut it, Coach. I mean, when I was a kid, my mom used to take me to Ben's Barbershop. And the haircut was $6, you know, plus you give them a $1 tip. So we didn't have money. So somebody got me some clippers when I was in seventh grade just to save some money on the $7 a week for a haircut. So I just started cutting my own hair and I never was very good at it. So I just, you know, got to the point where in college, I just cut it off, just cut it all off. So that's what I've always done.
You know, I walked in one time when I was a grad assistant at Indiana and Coach Knight standing in front of a mirror cutting his damn hair, and it was a show. Like, I'm like, dude, you make like millions when nobody was making millions. Go to a freaking barber. I went bald because I had too much wine and my stepson had clippers during the pandemic in about April. I'm like, screw it. Cut this shit off. Let's go.
Unbelievable. Hey, I've got a chance to watch your team play. I guess first of all, how proud are you of your kids dealing with everything that's gone on, but staying together, and then that veteran backcourt, their growth over the last few years?
Well, I think, first of all, for, you know, players around the country, you know, I don't think they probably get enough credit for just kind of weathering all the challenges that everybody's going through right now. I think those of us that are a little bit older, sometimes we forget what it's like to be that age, and you're already going through all kinds of twists and turns and changes, and, you know, your mind's certainly far from being fully formed. So, just those guys to come back in July and, you know, have a good attitude about all the uncertainty, you know, some of the changes that had to be made just for safety reasons. You know, we're really fortunate to have some older guards in Matt Coleman, Courtney Ramey, Andrew Jones, and those guys have led the way for us.
You know, we've talked about on this show a ton of times how old is important this year. Expound on that a little bit, if you don't mind.
Well, you guys know this from coaching. You know, one of the things that happens is when you're young as a team, particularly your backcourt, you know, it gets talked about maybe a little bit at the beginning of the season, but, you know, once you kind of get into the season, it is what it is. And, you know, you are kind of left to figure it out. And you only get one day older each day and one game older each game. So that takes time. But I think when you do have the experience, as I've told our guys, you've been in situations before. You know, you've been on the road where, you know, you were down and you came back. You've had a lead and lost it. You know, you've been in late game situations where you made or missed free throws, or where you turned the ball over, or you didn't turn the ball over. So it's being through those experiences and then being able to use those when it matters most.
Yeah, watching your team, Shockey, obviously you're built a lot of it on the defensive end. I mean, you guys are so long, so connected, so athletic. And I told you, I was watching on your Kansas tape, Jericho Sims. Like, we talk about the backcourt, we talk about Greg Brown, we talk about Jones, you know, and his potential. Like, Jericho Sims is the unsung hero of your team. Like, as you start to really dig in and like really concentrate on watch, does he even understand how important he is to your team?
Well, sometimes it's hard to know because he doesn't say much. So, you know, we try to make sure that we communicate to him how much we appreciate what he does on defense. Because, you know, our team's like a lot of teams. The guards get the most attention. The guards have the ball in their hands the most. The guards are kind of the strongest personalities. And he's a guy that he's very, very unique on the defensive end. He has ridiculous athleticism and strength, that combination of those two things. And he really is unique in that he can defend the biggest of bigs, but he also can go out on the floor and guard perimeter players. When he was a freshman, he had those physical attributes, but mentally he couldn't deal with being out on the floor and screening action and switches and stuff like that. Now he can, because he's really learned. So listen, I mean, if you look at any of the best defensive teams, it's because they have good defensive players. It's the same thing on offense. You know what I mean? Like, Iowa's phenomenal on offense. They got a great system for sure, but I mean, they got great shooters and they got the most dominant big in the country. It's the same thing on defense. So we have Jericho, we have Matt Coleman. Those guys are two of the better defenders that I've seen. You know, a team like Baylor, they've got Mark Vidal, they've got Davion Mitchell, they got, you know, ridiculously good individual defenders. Nothing to take away from anyone's system, because there's a lot of good coaches, and I know how coaches can be, but players are what makes it go.
Yeah, you do know how coaches can be, because if you the slightest slight becomes the biggest deal, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Nobody watches or listens to this podcast, so you can tell us. You're up like a million at Kansas. Like, did you look at the scoreboard and go, wait, is this Kansas? What the hell? I mean, because nobody beats Kansas by a million at Kansas. Did you know going into that game, Shaka, that you were going to get that kind of performance?
Well, I mean, obviously it was the margin of the game was, I think, a surprise for sure to everyone. But, you know, we were confident going up there. We felt like we could win. We felt like the guys looked like they were prepared. They looked like they were very, very engaged. When you go up to Kansas, the first thing is you got to have the audacity to think that you can win. Because I think it's something like, you know, Bill Self, I think, is one more Big 12 championships than the games he's lost in the league at home. That's a ridiculous statistic. So, you know, the last couple of years, we went up there and we actually had a lead at halftime, and they went on a run coming out of the half. And so for 3 days, we just prepared for, hey, guys, we'll probably be up at halftime, but that doesn't mean anything. We've been up at halftime. It's about the second half and coming out and playing defense when you're on the other end of the floor from our bench. And our guys did a good job of that.
You know, we talk about it, you live it. Okay. How big a deal? And it's not just Kansas. It's, you know, you're supposed to go to Maui, but you end up in, you know, Asheville, that kind of thing. How different is it on the road this year with no fans?
Yeah, it's different. I mean, it's different at home and it's different on the road.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and I've been able to watch a little bit more college basketball than in a normal year, just because we're not traveling for recruiting. So you have a little bit more time to do that. And particularly when I'm watching other teams' games, you really notice the element of team spirit, team connectivity, the body language on and off on the court and on the bench. That's like probably five times more important than it was before. What game was I watching? Maryland went to Wisconsin and won.
Yes.
And I mean, those guys were having so much fun and they were just so connected and so happy for each other when they made plays. You guys know, I mean, you can't put a price on that. I mean, that's so powerful.
Do you teach that? I'll tell you what, like Maryland, that happened to Maryland by Rutgers at Maryland. Like, and Turgeon made a big deal about, look at Rutgers' bench. They turned a road game into a home game, you know, because like the, you know, they got guys on the bench chanting defense. So Turgeon turned that around on his team. Do you use that with your team? Do you kind of coach that with your team?
Well, we make a big deal out of it. I'm a big spirit guy. So that's something that we talk about all the time. And I mean, you guys know from your teams, like when a guy's not right, you can see it on his face. And then when you say, hey, come on, man, you got to get right. He says, no, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. And that's a code word for, no, I'm not good. But I don't want you to remind me that I'm not good. We've got a guy on our team named Kamaka Hepa. And he actually wasn't able to go to Kansas with us. And we were really, really worried about our spirit without him and Royce Ham, because they're two of our higher energy guys. But Kamaka Hepa, he has as good a spirit as anyone I've ever been around. And it just, he exudes it to other guys. So I think, obviously, it's just like defense or offense. Your team spirit is accumulation of the individual guys. And if you got a bunch of low energy guys, you know, you're going to be in trouble with that. So yeah, we try to teach it. One of the best things I saw, there's a clip of Coach Belichick many years ago talking to the Patriots, and he's showing tape of when they were making plays, but nobody was excited about it. And he said, we can't win like this. And then there was a Monday night game where they were really, really into it and guys were excited for each other. And he said, "This, look at what this does to the other team." And I think this year that's more exposed than ever, the way that your spirit affects the other team either way, just because of the absence of fans.
You know, we saw that a lot in the bubble with the NBA.
Like the NBA benches, I've never seen, you know, NBA usually they're laid back, you know, I mean, totally not into the game until they get into the game. And in the bubble, it was unbelievable. I mean, how energized and had ownership. Now, speaking of ownership, I know you're being into signs and messaging and things like that. And I saw the sign about the road trip when I did that game in Alabama with you guys. What is this year's message that you're carrying with your team game to game? Because, you know, I know you always have those big boards and sometimes your manager will hold them up, just kind of the imagery of giving your guys the right messaging. What's this year's message?
Well, you know, the funny thing with that stuff is, I mean, as you guys know, it's only as effective as, you know, it moves the players. So I always like doing that stuff. You know, when I was at VCU, we did some crazy, crazy stuff. And then you kind of find out on the back end when you talk to guys after the fact how moving it was to them. One time, our theme for the game, this was many, many years ago, was get to their guts. Because we felt like we were playing a team that when you really got to what was deep inside, you know, you could really get to them. So before the game, we went to the butcher and we got some pig guts. And the guys came back in the locker room right before the game started and I had the guts in a wheelbarrow and I threw them down on the floor and they stunk and all that. And a couple of the guys almost threw up. So it kind of missed the mark a little bit, you know, what I was trying to get to. But we have a circle this year, Coach, that has five elements of basically when we're at our best, we're these five things. And so we really encourage our guys and try to push our guys to get into the circle because you don't necessarily roll out of bed in the circle. Like it doesn't necessarily always come naturally. So you have to actively get yourself and help others on the team get into the circle.
When you look at your – and for people that don't know, I just looked this up. Coach just mentioned Kamaka Hepa. He's played in three games. He's played 3 minutes, and yet he does enough on his team that you're mentioning him, which is really cool for not only that kid, but really cool for, you know, kids or coaches that want to clip that and use it. When you look at your team, and you look at it from your eye, critical eye, what do you need to get better at?
Well, that's the thing is, you know, sometimes we can be overly critical, but right. There's so many things that we need to get better. I mean, we really haven't even played as well as we can play yet. You know, I think the biggest thing that we have to get better at is understanding on the offensive end. It's kind of that balance in between. We want to play with pace, but sometimes when you try to go too fast, then, you know, you're not making the right play and the right read. You know, Coach Wooden said, be quick, but don't hurry. So that's the biggest area where we have to get better because, you know, we have some guards that are good at controlling the game, and you don't want to dribble 17 times, you know, and we, you know, when we do get to playing fast with pace, it can be good for us, but then, you know, we'll have halves where we have 10 turnovers, which is obviously a problem. So that's probably the biggest area where we need to get better.
Fourth in the country right now in this moment in time, and everything's just a snapshot because, especially with this season, because you never know what's going to be around the corner. Your league is absolutely brutal. I mean, there aren't any rocking chair games in your league. I mean, you look what happened last night, even just with West Virginia coming back down 19 to win on the road at Oklahoma State. Obviously, you want to celebrate where you are. How do you get your guys to understand that we've got to still put good days on top of each other? That, you know, like you say, the offensive thing's playing too fast. You've changed your offense a little bit. It's more four around with Jericho setting some different screens. Your four guys will set some flat ball screens on the side and pop and do some different things. How do you get them to stay in the moment with now all of a sudden all the success that you've had? So you want them to feel good, but you also want them to be hungry. How do you find that balance in a pandemic?
I think that, you know, just as a society, we tend to be too high and too low. So, you know, we talk about what it is that we're trying to do moving forward. You know, we're fortunate in that particularly Matt Coleman and Court Ramey, they don't get overly impressed with themselves. They don't necessarily, you know, feel like, man, I played this phenomenal game the other day. We've got some other guys that, you know, younger guys maybe that do get pretty impressed with doing something or ending up on the top 10 plays or whatever it may be. But, you know, a quote that I like to use with these guys is, you know, if you're really impressed with what you did yesterday, you know, that I always butcher quotes, but then that doesn't really say much about what you think you can do today because you're so locked in on, you know, what you did before. So, you know, you use the term celebrate. I don't think we've gone into any game feeling like, man, it would be a miracle if we can win this game. You know, we've really felt confident in these games, and we lost Villanova. You know, and certainly would love to have that game back, but the other games we won, and after the game, we were happy, glad we won, but it's like, okay, let's try to get better because we know we've got even more competition coming.
You win the Maui Asheville, you know, Invitational, and you lose to Villanova. And you know, I hear people say, "Well, that loss is good for them." Was that loss good for you?
Not as good as a win.
I'm saying.
I think that first of all, it's all about, I think, from winning and losing, what lessons can you take from the game? And obviously, you know, these guys, 18 to 22 years old, so. You know, I try to put myself back in that age. But the one good thing about a game like that is Villanova made us pay for some mistakes that we made in that game. And, you know, we lost, I don't know, 4 points, whatever it was. And, you know, it was a game that, you know, maybe if we play better or we don't make as many mistakes, we can win. But that's the lesson that you have to take from that.
Because there are seasons where you go, man, as the season goes on, God, we were really good back then. You know, why aren't we that good? Or there are seasons where you go, man, we're so much better right now. How the hell did we beat those teams we beat earlier because we're so much better? And that, I assume you're trying to get to the latter, not the former.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's not necessarily a linear path, like straight up, straight down.
Right.
It's more like, you know, jagged deal because – and again, it goes back to spirit. It goes like the number one thing is, and I always have felt like, I don't know how you guys feel about this, basketball is the ultimate individual team sport. It's both. Obviously, you win as a team, whichever team has more points on the board wins. But man, this game is marketed by the individual at the NBA level. Recruiting is all individual. The way that the game is looked at by maybe some of the people on the outside of teams, whether it's, you know, fill in the blank, you know, third parties or whatever.
Sure.
And so what we're trying to do is come together and do something special as a group. But our team's no different than any other team. We've got guys with individual goals. We've got guys that, you know, want to play well. And, you know, the be all and end all for them certainly isn't this season. So that's what's fascinating about it, and that's why it's a jagged edge, because on different days, you may have different level of commitment to just simply doing what the team needs. And I think maybe a fan would look at it and say, well, why that, you know, why is that? That's, you know, you should always have the same. It's because these guys are human beings. That's why.
Right.
Yeah. How do you, so in that, say you got kid Greg Brown, who's, you know, I thought it was one of the great quotes of all time. You said he rebounds violently, which I thought was one of the great preseason quotes of all time. But he's a special talent, and he's still learning how to be a winning college basketball player. In other words, at on any given night, he can do spectacular things, and then he can do things where you know, kind of head scratching a little bit, where he gets lost in himself or just doesn't get it. How do you deal with a kid like that who is, and you've dealt with, you've had so many, whether it was Bamba, whether it was Allen, and you've had, you know, these one and done big guys. How do you deal with finding that balance for the individual and then getting him to understand the good of the group? I mean, I got to believe, you know, I've never had those kind of guys. You didn't have those guys at VCU. I mean, you had guys at VCU just that they would kill for each other because that's all that was really important to them in a lot of ways. How do you get those guys to buy into maybe they're 7 months in Austin?
Well, I think it starts well before the season. And this is what was challenging about this year with the limitations because of the pandemic. But one of the things I tell those guys all the time is I say, we're going to be in our second or third or seventh game, and you're going to play some guy that you've never heard of from some school you've never heard of, and he's going to kick your ass. And you're going to completely be dumbfounded on how did that just happen? And that's when you're going to need to decide, do I internalize that experience and really look inward and say, okay, what do I need to grow and improve on? Or do I look around for places to blame? You know, my teammates did this, or coach isn't running enough for me, or the refs, whatever it may be. And the thing that Greg Brown has going for him is, before he even got here, his dad said, you need to be as hard on him as you possibly can. Coach him hard. Stay on him. I mean, shoot, the other day we're playing against Kansas, at Kansas. We take Greg out of the game because he got scored on two times in a row. He's coming out of the game, and his dad's yelling at him from the bench about what he needs to do better. So, I mean, and you guys know this. I think a lot of people that haven't coached don't understand this. When there's an alignment between the coaches and the family of these type of players, this ilk of guys that, let's be honest, they're not going to be in college long, that is like the most valuable thing you can have. Because when there isn't that alignment, the kid can't handle it mentally. Because over here, he's got what he's hearing from the coaching staff. Over here, he's got, you know, something completely different. And that just makes their brain explode.
Man, that's a great answer. And that is so true. I mean, the static that's around guys like that, unless they have their circle, you know, the circle of influence has the right voice. Obviously, Greg, his dad is the right voice. That man, that's a blessing. Because if not, it makes everyone's life miserable.
Absolutely. But you know what? It's one of those things where he's a kid that's very interested in how can I be better after the fact? He's very self-reflective. So, you know, you can always coach guys like that, you know, show them tape, you work. And the reality is, I don't care who you are. If you start as a freshman in game one, you're not going to be as good as you are in game 20 if you're willing to improve. So that's just what we're trying to work towards.
Awesome.
Hey, Shaka, that's great stuff, man. I know you got to run. I appreciate you. Appreciate you very much. It's been awesome, man.
No, thank you guys. I mean, it's always good to be on with coaches, you know, because we won't get into folks that are not coaches.
No, we could, though. I'm willing.
Don't get us started right now.
I'll go wherever you want.
We're in one of those moods this morning. So we're all pissed off about, like, Brian Kelly are, you know, getting questioned about, you know, losing a game, and like they've been to the Final Four whatever zillion times, and like, man, you know, hey, I'm going to keep on working. We're going to keep on recruiting. We're going to keep on coaching. And you know what? They put us in the playoffs. We played a good team, a team that beat us. So be it. And then you answer like that, and we have these guru media guys who like are offended. Well, what the hell is he supposed to say? I suck. We shouldn't have been in there. I'm doing a shitty job. They should fire my ass. I mean, come on. I mean, like, but if you say something, but you can't say this, but if you say something back to those dudes, they absolutely lose their mind. So you keep on doing, like, we say stuff that you can't say because you know what? We're two fire coaches anyway.
What are they going to do?
Well, I appreciate, you know, the fact that you guys, you know, have the platform you have and say the things you say.
Well, that's it for today. I'll tell you what, that's a hell of a show. We broke some news with Dan Gavitt. Shaka Smart gave a coach's clinic. If you are a coach, I'm going to put this on Twitter, Seth. If you're a coach, you got to listen to what Shaka had to say. You'll have a better understanding of coaching and a better understanding of your kids and a better understanding of what team is. But frankly, Seth, that's what we're here for. We're not here to be a freaking guru and tell you who's on the hot seat and who, blah, 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 blah. We're here to give you.
Don't let me throw a sock at you, but you know what? We are in the circle. Let's put it that way.
We are. All right. We've had Dan Gavitt, Shaka Smart. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.